regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. We're going to be talking with Chuck Michelle, head of the California Rifle and Pistol Association in the 2A Law Center. In just a moment, delving once again into the extensive history of extreme hostility towards our right to keep bear arms displayed by Kamala Harris during her political career. Chuck has been dealing with this for decades since Kamala Harris was a district attorney in San Francisco, then the Attorney General of California. And he's bringing the receipts ahead of Kamala Harris's sit down with Fox News' Brett Baer. That's supposed to happen tomorrow afternoon. I wrote a piece of Bearing Arms on Monday talking about the five questions I would like to see Brett Baer ask Kamala Harris about her gun ownership and, more importantly, her gun control policies. But I imagine that Chuck has some questions that he'd like to see posed as well. We're also going to talk with Chuck, at least briefly, about the Supreme Court's decision today in a case called Paris versus Lara. This was a challenge, or is a challenge, to Pennsylvania's ban on open carry for young adults during a state of emergency. Now, you have to be 21 years of age to get a concealed carry license in Pennsylvania, but you can open carry at age 18 unless the state is under a state of emergency, which for several years, Pennsylvania was. The governor had declared a state of emergency over the opioid epidemic and a number of other things. So the state was basically operating in this continual state of emergency, which prohibited adults under the age of 21 from openly carrying a firearm. The Third Circuit Court of Appeals found that that law was unconstitutional, a violation of young adults' Second Amendment rights. But the Supreme Court today, without any comment or any dissent, granted cert to that case, then vacated the Third Circuit's ruling, remanded that case back down to the Third Circuit for further review in light of Rahimi, which means that the open carry ban for young adults is back in place in Pennsylvania for the moment. So we're going to get to Chuck's thoughts on that as well. Is there anything that Chuck takes away from this, either good or more likely bad, from the Supreme Court's decision today? Let's get right to it with Chuck Michelle, head of the California Rifle and Pistol Association, co-founder of the 2A Law Center. Chuck, thanks so much for coming on the show. It's good to see you again, sir.
Always a pleasure, Cam. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you bet. So Kamala Harris is going to sit down with a Brett Baer of Fox News on Wednesday. I said at Bearing Arms yesterday, that's probably the best opportunity and the best chance to ask her some of the questions that are still swirling around her positions that she's taken on the right to keep and bear arms, or I guess in her case, the non-right to keep and bear arms, right?
Right.
As well as her own gun ownership. She says she owns a Glock. She apparently bought it at some point in California when she was a prosecutor, maybe the district attorney. She's been very vague about what kind of Glock she owns, when she bought that gun. And these things matter, right? I mean, because
absolutely.
The average Californian can't walk into a gun store and get, well, they might be able to get a Glock, but they can only get a particular model of Glock handguns.
Yeah, they can get a Generation 3. Those are still on the roster. But that's, you know, I think that's 2010. Since then, the Gen 4 and Gen 5s have come out, and those are not on the roster because they don't have a loaded chamber indicator and a magazine disconnect and a micro stamping. They could not get on the roster. They were not grandfathered in. The Gen 3 was grandfathered in. So there's only two ways to get a gun that's not on the roster.
Okay.
One is you're a law enforcement officer, and that means a police officer, a peace officer, with powers of arrest, and you're certified by the Peace Officer Standard Training Program, post-certified. DAs are not, and she was a deputy district attorney in Alameda and then the DA in San Francisco. They are not peace officers. They are lawyers representing the government. So she does not qualify herself, and no DA qualifies themselves as a law enforcement officer, so to get the exemption to buy an off-roster gun. The only other way to do it is through a private party transfer. So anybody that has any gun that's not on the roster can still sell that gun in California. They have to process it through a retailer, through an FFL, to whoever the buyer may be. And so a lot of times they're kind of put on consignment in the dealer's display case, and somebody comes in and they have to bring the seller back in, and it's like, you know, they have to do the sale. But the thing is, it's very unusual for any private party to have a Gen 4 or Gen 5 Glock because you couldn't buy it on the roster, off the roster to begin with, but cops could. Now, there's been a lot of scandal out here where cops were buying guns, more recent, you know, better guns, current models, and then marking them up and selling them to private people as a private party transfer. That's called a straw sale if it's arranged in advance. And even if it's not arranged in advance, cops have gone to jail for buying a gun that they say is for them to use as peace officers when in fact they're intending to resell it. So if Kamala Harris, and I can see this, you know, I've worked at the district attorney's office. There's an office down the hall where all the DA investigators hang out. And DA investigators, those guys are peace officers. Those guys are cops, and they can buy off-roster guns. If she was friends with one of them or some officer that she worked with on a case or something, and he said, hey, I'll get you this better gun, get better Glock, I'll buy it for you, and then you buy it for me. But that's a straw sale and potentially a crime. So these are the questions we need to know from her. What model gun is this? When did you buy it? And who did you buy it from?
Which, by the way, should be easy enough to answer, right? Yet she has repeatedly refused to provide any details about when she bought a gun, right? She has said it was when she was a prosecutor, but she didn't say if it was when she was the DA, whether she was in Alameda County, when she was a deputy prosecutor. She has not detailed what type of Glock she owns, right? It's been all very, very fuzzy and vague as to when she bought that gun, why she bought that gun, and how she bought that gun. But you're absolutely right about, you know, the issues here. I was just, as we sat down to talk, I remember writing about a couple of these cases. And yeah, former Torrance police officer agrees to plead guilty with being an unlicensed firearms dealer who sold dozens of off-roster guns. That was November of 2020. Two Gardena police officers guilty of buying off-roster guns and then turning around and selling them. That was 2019. So we have seen incidents like this. And in fact, I would argue, Chuck, that the roster is one of the ways, much like California's May issue laws, encouraged corruption among law enforcement. We saw that with the pay-to-play scandal in Santa Clara County. This off-roster, or the handgun roster, it's almost an invitation to law enforcement officers to abuse their position and engage in, you know, under the table gun trafficking, because they have special dispensation. Yeah. So, you know, the issue, I think, with bringing this up, let's say Brett Baer wants to talk about this, is how do you succinctly explain to non-Californians the screwy laws that are in place in the state, right? I mean, you can't have a 3-minute buildup to asking a simple question, but you almost have to, because California's laws are so distinctly different than the laws in almost every other state of the union when it comes to purchasing a handgun.
Yeah. I mean, the roster limits the number of guns that civilians can actually access to a few hundred models, rather than the rest of the country, where you have 10,000 or more models of guns to choose from. And by the way, that whole roster was put in place because Kamala Harris, that whole limitation, I should say, the roster was before microstamping, then microstamping came along. It wasn't certified by Jerry Browner, the previous attorney generals before Kamala Harris, but then she becomes attorney general and she immediately certifies microstamping as available. And that causes, that means you can't put any more guns on the roster unless they have micro stamping. So the number of guns on the roster goes down more because of her.
Yeah, she was the one that did that, which essentially and it didn't just freeze the roster, right? Because that's the thing. If a design changed and, you know, let's say, you know, a screw was moved a quarter of an inch, Cal DOJ under Kamala Harris and the folks that came after, including Rob Bonta, say, oh, well, that's a significant change, right? That's a whole new, essentially a whole new model of handgun now.
Exactly.
And it gets taken off of the roster.
Model number, you know how minor change, they put a spring in with an extra twist because it wasn't working to eject previously. The DOJ, even if they don't, if the manufacturer doesn't change the model number, they consider it a new model. And then it has to be tested to get on the roster again, but it can't get on the roster. No gun can get on the roster once microstamping passed, unless it has micro stamping. And Smith and Ruger and Smith and Wesson and Ruger both said, we can't do this. We're not going to incorporate microstamping, and no other manufacturer did either.
Right.
And they sued, and the court said, yeah, it's impossible, but that's so what? Impossibility doesn't mean the law is illegal.
Right. And didn't California recently go back and tweak the microstamping law? Like, there's a new provision that now says, what, it goes into effect in 2028?
Yes, because of the CRPA's Boland lawsuit, where we sued the OJ over the unsafe Handgun Act and the roster, and said, you're limiting people's ability to buy the latest, greatest, and safest handguns. Those three features, loaded chamber indicator, magazine disconnect lock, and microstamping, are a Second Amendment violation. The court upheld they ruled in our favor. And then when the attorney general appealed the federal district court ruling, the trial court's ruling, they abandoned the microstamping claim rather than try and defend it. So then the legislature went in and modified microstamping to put a new microstamping law in place that they think has a better chance of standing up to Second Amendment challenges.
Unbelievable. I mean,
so we won on microstamping. Guns don't need microstamping right now. They still right. need a loaded chamber indicator and a magazine disconnect. But, you know, the problem is people, by the way, the DOJ, you have to pay a renewal fee every year to keep your gun on the roster.
Yeah.
And a lot of companies don't have the system set up. They don't get a bill. You just have to remember to send in your check. And if you don't send in your check, your gun falls off the roster and you can't get it back on unless it has the loaded chamber indicator and the magazine disconnect. So the list keeps getting smaller and smaller.
That is so crazy. But somehow Kamala found a way. You know, so obviously you would love to hear Brett Baer bring this up. Or anybody else that Kamala Harris talks to. I don't know that any podcaster out there that she's spending time with is going to ask her these questions. But, you know, if you could ask her, if you had the chance to interview Kamala Harris live on television, beyond those questions about, again, what type of gun did you buy? When did you buy it? How did you buy it? Was it off roster? What is the most important question that you think Kamala Harris needs to be asked when it comes to the Second Amendment?
Well, those specific questions about the gun, yes, but the broader questions are, if you support handgun ownership or gun ownership in general, why are you advocating banning all semi-automatic firearms? Why did you support Proposition H in San Francisco that would have taken away all civilian firearms, all civilian handguns, banned the possession of civilian handguns or ammunition in the city of San Francisco? You supported it. Why did you support the Heller case? Why did you argue that the District of Columbia should be able to ban handguns in that district when you put an amicus brief in saying so in the Heller case? Why did you support all the other gun bans that San Francisco ran through the years? I mean, she never had a gun control law she didn't like. So if she's favors the Second Amendment, what is the second? You know what? Here's the general question, which you can weasel out of. You say you support the Second Amendment. What does the Second Amendment protect in your view? Because really, I suspect what it protects is one handgun, like a revolver, in your house with, you know, one or two bullets. You can't take it outside. Oh, that's the other thing she did. She, when we were winning the Peruta case on concealed carry, she weighed in and said that you should not be forced to allow, people should not be able to get concealed carry. It's not a matter of right. They have to. So the good cause requirement, which previously existed in California, should be upheld. Issuing entities should have broad discretion in deciding what good cause means, including saying, you know, in order to establish good cause, you have to have a stalker that signed his name to a letter saying he's going to kill you before you qualify for a CCW. She has advocated for zero issuance of CCWs in court. So she's a hypocrite. She's just lying through her teeth to pander to some gun owners who may not be as involved in the issue as you and I and your listeners are.
Right.
And they see Walt's out there fumbling around with his shotgun in his orange hunting vest and think, oh, he's a hunter. He's a shooter. He can't be bad. Well, you know, yeah, you can. And she has a Glock. Oh, she can't be. Well, yeah, she's bad, you know?
Yeah.
So this is all window dressing to fool people.
It is. I don't know how successful it is, quite honestly. As you noted, Tim Walz, you know, who's been bragging about what a great shot he was, had trouble even loading his shotgun over the weekend, which I Tim Walz has gone out for opening day of pheasant hunting season before. I assume that, you know, he's telling the truth when he says that he owns a gun, but it certainly did not seem familiar with that particular shotgun that he had, that he said he had bought a while ago back when he was doing a lot of trap shooting. But Kamala's, I think, an entirely different story, right? Because Tim Walz is a guy who has shifted his position. When he was in Congress, he was A-rated by the NRA. Then when he decided to run for statewide office in Minnesota, all of a sudden he starts towing the Democratic Party line. Kamala's, you know, kind of moving in that opposite direction, right? I mean, for most of her career, as you say, she advocated for a collective rights view of the Second Amendment. You don't even have a right to keep a gun in your home. You don't have the right to carry a firearm. 2 years ago, she said that Bruin defied common sense in the Constitution, wanted to keep those, you know, May issue laws in place that I just said led to these scandals in places like Santa Clara County, where the sheriff was, she was found guilty in a civil trial of corruption. Several of her underlings have either been convicted or are still facing charges. But basically, if you wanted a concealed carry license in Santa Clara County, you cut a check to this independent campaign supporting Sheriff Smith's reelection, or you said, hey, you know what? I'll donate some iPads to the sheriff's department. You did, it was a quid pro quo. If you want to be able to carry, you had to give them something. Meanwhile, right. If you had a stalker, your application was put in a drawer and forgotten about. I mean, there were during Sheriff Smith's trial, there were people who testified that their lives were in danger, that they submitted a concealed carry application and they simply never heard back from the sheriff's department.
Right. Because that's the new game. It's passive aggressive that we're dealing with. And that's why we sued the LA County Sheriff, because they're taking a year or more to issue a permit. And then you've got cities like Laverne charging $1,000. Remember, these permits are only good for 2 years.
Right.
The good thing is out of one of those cases, we got a ruling that says out of state residents have to be able to apply for a California CCW. Now, that means that issuing agencies throughout the state are going to have to be able to process out-of-state applications. So they're all a little a Twitter right now trying to figure out how they're going to handle that. And the good thing that's going to come out of it, I think, is that the State Sheriff's Association is going to finally go up to Sacramento and say, you've got to simplify, clarify, and revise the entire CCW process, make it a 5-year license instead of a 2-year license like every other state does, allow online training for in-state as well as out-of-state residents, just streamline the process, because right now they're playing games with the process to try and bog down the system so that people can't get the permits as fast as they should be getting.
Yeah. And obviously, again, that case is still I would consider the early stages, right? We have not yet had a trial on the merits in the district court. But I do want to ask you about something that happened in the Supreme Court today. Just to get your take on this. There's a case called Paris versus Lara that dealt with, this gets a little confusing, a ban on open carry for under 21s during a state of emergency in Pennsylvania. You have to be 21 to get a concealed carry license in the state of Pennsylvania, but you could open carry at 18 unless there was a clear state of emergency. And as it just so happens, there was a state of emergency in place for about 3 years in Pennsylvania, various states of emergencies that were overlapping. So there was no ability for under 21s to lawfully bear arms. Third Circuit said that's wrong. It violates the Second Amendment. There was a request for an en banc review that was denied by the Third Circuit. So the state of Pennsylvania appealed that Third Circuit decision up to the Supreme Court. And today the Supreme Court granted cert, vacated the Third Circuit's decision, remanded the case back down to the Third Circuit in light of Rahimi. And it could be, Chuck, that, you know, it wasn't the outcome that the Supreme Court had an issue with. It was the how they got there.
Methodology.
Right. Because this was decided pre-Rahimi. But I am a little concerned here. You know, I think we saw some good news with the Maryland assault weapons ban case, where the court did not agree to that 30-day extension that the state of Maryland had requested. Instead, I think they gave him like 3 weeks. But that'll still be heard in conference before the end of the year. I think that's a good sign. But then there's a couple of days later, we get this, which is kind of a concerning sign that the Supreme Court didn't just reject the state of Pennsylvania's cert petition, keeping that Third Circuit decision in place. And instead, they said to the Third Circuit, all right, do this over again.
Well, if the Third Circuit's decision came down before Rahimi.
Mm-hmm.
So the Supreme Court has sent a couple of cases back down that were decided before Rahimi and said, reconsider in light of Rahimi. I mean, I don't want to try and read too many tea leaves or prognosticate with my crystal ball, but it's quite possible that this is more of a housekeeping exercise. They want to have the Third Circuit cite the Rahimi case in the opinion and bring it up with their analysis back to the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
It could be that someone on the Supreme Court's hostile to open carry by folks under 21 in a state of emergency, but I'm not sure that you can read that into this.
Well,
I think
I was just going to say, and to that end, one of the cases that the Supreme Court GVR'd was Range versus Garland. And that was also a Third Circuit case. Brian Range convicted of a nonviolent misdemeanor, falsifying his income on a food stamp application, but it was punishable by more than a year in jail at the time. So even though he got probation, he was barred from possessing a firearm. The Third Circuit found that unconstitutional. But the Supreme Court GVR'd the Range case back down to the Third Circuit after, I think it was after Rahimi. It might have been after Rahimi. They just had oral arguments again. And I feel pretty good, actually. I think the Third Circuit's going to come to the same conclusion based on the questions that I was hearing during the oral arguments. There was a great deal of skepticism that a lifetime ban for nonviolent felons possessing a firearm was compatible with our Second Amendment rights. So even if the Supreme Court GVR'd this case, it doesn't mean that all of a sudden the Third Circuit is going to flip and we're going to get a different
absolutely,
outcome,
absolutely
right?
Absolutely not. It could be as simple as the Supreme Court wants to see a Rahimi analysis included in their analysis.
Yeah.
They want to see Rahimi factored in. And that doesn't mean that Rahimi makes them lose. They just have to include it.
Okay. All right. Well, that is good to know.
Hopefully,
right? And hopefully, before long, we get some good news out of the Fourth Circuit in the Snope versus Brown case, the Maryland ban on so-called assault weapons. I would love to see SCOTUS grant cert.
And Duncan, it's the Snope, formerly Bianchi case.
Yep.
It went up all the way through en banc review and back to the Supreme Court. That thing is wrapped up in the lower courts. Supreme Court's decision to try and figure out what to do with it. And then Duncan is the other case. We're still waiting for an en banc decision from the en banc panel in the Duncan case. And whatever happens there will probably go to the Supreme Court, too. If we win, obviously, we don't have to take it there. Remember, that's 11 judges. So we've got to get six to win. And I think in light of Bruin and Rahimi, there's a good chance that we might change a couple of minds and prevail, particularly with all the infighting that's going on in the Ninth Circuit between the Trump appointee judges and the old guard, more progressive Ninth Circuit judges that they bend over backwards intellectually to uphold gun control laws.
Right. Yeah. The ones that I think we had a 50 case streak. 50 plus cases where the Ninth Circuit upheld these gun control laws, even if a 3-judge panel said, no, this is unconstitutional, go on bonk and bloop, that would get reversed. But there does seem to be a little bit more hope coming out of the Ninth Circuit. And of course, depending on what happens with the election, maybe we can actually flip the Ninth once again and have a majority of justices that recognize and accept, if not support, an individual right.
People
to
need to understand the consequences of the election go far beyond Donald Trump making policy decisions in the Oval Office. It's all the judges and the bureaucrats and the not to mention the senators and representatives. Those races. I mean, it's just critical. It's a very, very trying time, a very, walk in the edge, the razor's edge time for this country. And you got to get out and vote and lock in our freedoms.
Absolutely. Well, listen, Chuck, I appreciate you carving out a couple of minutes today to talk about this. Hopefully we do get one of those questions asked by Brett Baer when Kamala Harris does the sit down tomorrow. If not, again, we might not get those questions before Election Day, and that'd be a travesty, in my opinion. All right, yeah, Chuck Michelle, California Rifle and Pistol Association, Second Amendment Law Center. Thanks as always for your time, sir. And look forward to talking to you again very soon.
Look forward to it, Cam. Thanks for having me.
My thanks once again to Chuck for joining us on the program today. Now let's turn our attention to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and a recidivist story from Tennessee. Over the weekend, there was a shooting near Tennessee State University's homecoming. One person was killed, 9 others injured. Police believe at least 5 individuals were shooting, some in self-defense, shooting back at the original aggressors there. And now there's word that 2 suspects have been arrested after this shooting, one of whom should have been in prison instead of out on the street. According to the USA Today's Julia Gomez, Marquez Davis and DeAnthony Brown, both age 24, were arrested at a short-term rental in Nashville and charged with criminal homicide, according to the Nashville Police Department. Now, according to the USA Today reporter, Marquez Davis, was previously convicted of robbery, felony gun possession, and felony drug possession in April of this year. He received a 10-year probationary sentence and was sentenced to the Community Corrections Program. So, convicted of 3 felonies, including the violent crime of robbery, 6 months ago. But instead of being sent to prison, Marquez Davis was placed on a decade-long probation, one that he is, again, accused of violating by illegally possessing a firearm and then engaging in this shooting near Tennessee State University over the weekend. So as you hear, gun control advocates in Tennessee talk about the need for tougher gun laws, you hear politicians in Memphis talk about, well, we need to undo preemption. We need our local laws in place. Mm-mm. You just need to enforce the laws in the books. I don't want to hear any talk about laws that are going to impact the right to keep and bear arms when violent offenders are walking away with nothing more than probation after being convicted of multiple felony offenses, as was the case with Mr. Marquez Davis. All right, on to today's Armed Citizen story from Florida, where an alleged carjacker was shot and killed at a gas station near Boca Raton over the weekend. What's interesting here is that the carjacker wasn't shot by his intended victim. Instead, there were some passerby that actually saw what was going on. According to Boca News Now, a woman who had her kids inside the car was at a gas station. It was just before 5 o'clock on Sunday afternoon. And this individual named Brian Simmel allegedly tried to carjack the woman, tried to forcibly enter a vehicle that was occupied by a mother and her children. 3 men, according to Boca News Now, intervened and prevented Simmel from entering the vehicle. At some point during the altercation, one of those 3 individuals discharged his firearm, striking Simmel. Boca News Now reports that the 3 men, as well as additional witnesses, remain on scene, cooperating with investigators. Detectives say that they will present this case to the Broward County State's Attorney's Office for review, but it sounds like this armed individual was acting in defense of others, and perhaps himself, if there was an altercation between him and Brian Simmel, who passed away from his injuries shortly after he was shot. Again, you have the right to protect yourself, and you also have the right to protect others. So as long as the witness statements corroborate that version of events, I don't think that this armed citizen is going to face any charges whatsoever for coming to the aid of a woman who's about to be carjacked with her kids inside her vehicle. But we'll keep our eyes open for any more details as they become available. Finally today, our good deed of the day in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. I guess it is the season for fires. The weather is getting colder. A lot of people are plugging in their heaters for the first time. They're starting their furnace up. Make sure that you've got your furnace clean. Make sure that your space heater is not obstructed or in a position where it could catch things on fire, because unfortunately we're seeing a lot of these types of stories where blazes erupt and there's somebody in place willing to step up and save lives. That's what happened in Northwest Indiana, where a woman saved several of her neighbors during a blaze at a trailer park that eventually destroyed, I think it was a total of four homes, and two cars destroyed in this fire. Amanda Stoddard is one of those individuals impacted by the blaze. She lost almost everything. She said the flames were coming through my window in my living room and my front bedroom. Happened in Gary, Indiana over the weekend about 6:30 Saturday morning. Stoddard says she woke up to the flames and made a split second decision. She said the trailer next door to me was fully engulfed. The only thing I knew to do was to get everybody out because they go so fast. So I did. I woke up every neighbor, the whole trailer park, really, and got them all out in time. One of those neighbors, John Denemy, he said, not only did she save my life, but she saved my dog's life. And my dog went through a hard life. He was a rescue. He suffers from a hearing disability. And Denemy said, Amanda kicked my door in. And because I'm hearing impaired, can't hear when people are knocking on my door. She kicked my door in as the trailer next to me, the flames were getting closer and closer to my trailer. The trailer park owner, John Petrassi, also tried to fight the flames himself. He said, I came out in my boxers, no shoes, ran down the street, tried to put the fire out with that hose right over there, but the hose melted. Ultimately, it took firefighters about 90 minutes to fight the flames. But again, when the fire was over, four trailers, two cars destroyed. Denomini says the outpouring is just something else. Everybody's doing what they can to help people. So as far as that goes, yeah, I'm grateful that I'm still standing here talking to you. Something that may very well not have been possible were it not for the quick thinking and the life-saving actions of Amanda Stoddard, who, again, lost her own home in this fire, but saved numerous lives in the process. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. I want to thank you, as always, for being a part of the program. Looking forward to seeing you back here again tomorrow for our Wednesday Hump Day session. Don't forget, by the way, also on Wednesdays, we do our VIP Gold Live Chat with Hot Air's Ed Morrissey at 1:30 Eastern. I'd love for you to be a part of that. Just become a VIP Gold or VIP Platinum member, and you can take part in the fun. I'll just go to BearingArms.com/subscribe. Use the promo code FIGHT. You get a significant savings on your VIP, VIP Gold, or VIP Platinum membership. You get all kinds of exclusive goodies, but you'll also be supporting the independent pro-Second Amendment journalism that we're doing at Bearing Arms, and that is critically important these days. So thank you again for all your support. Have a great rest of your 2A Tuesday. I will be on Newsmax in the 5 p.m. hour with my friend Carl Higbee, so be sure to check that out as well. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free.